William Safire has been a reporter, a publicist, a speechwriter, word sleuth, political operative, columnist, and novelist. On Monday, he'll scale back some, retiring his New York Times op-ed column, but maintaining his Sunday on Language column. NPR's David Folkenflik reports.
He's a blend of street smarts and book smarts. His opinions reveal him as a hawk on military issues in Israel and a bear about defending civil liberties, and his columns have sparked equal measures of adulation and controversy. It's hard now to imagine the New York Times without William Safire, its first truly conservative columnist. For decades, Safire was the only one there to reflect the views of those voters who helped Republicans to win 7 of the last 10 presidential elections. Gail Collins, editorial page editor of the Times, says Safire serves as a bridge between two generations of commentators.
He really is that older line columnist who talks to all the big playmakers, but he also has this spectacular voice, this sort of great and kind of winning tone with which he writes.
But Safire's appointment to the Times in 1973 outraged many of his new colleagues. His main offense? His work as a speechwriter and aide to Richard Nixon. In November 1968, Safire took a story from the campaign trail and wove it into Nixon's victory speech.
A little town, I suppose 5 times the population was there in the dusk. It was almost impossible to see, but a teenager held up the sign, "Bring us together." And that will be the great objective of this administration at the outset, to bring the American people together.
But much of the rhetoric took on an us-versus-them tone. And Safire played a role in that divisive strategy, too. He devised the now famous alliterative assault on the press for Nixon's vice president, Spiro Agnew.
In the United States today, we have more than our share of the nattering nabobs of negativism.
Safire arrived at the Times as scandal began to seep into the White House. Both Nixon and Agnew resigned in disgrace. Fellow Nixon aide David Gergen says Safire remained fiercely loyal.
Not that he's a total apologist, but he's someone who saw the bright side of Nixon and later on wrote one of the best descriptions of Nixon of anybody because he understood him so well, and that is he described him as a layered cake, and that the deeper you went, the more complex Nixon seemed to become.
Times staffers snubbed Safire. Former Times reporter David Halberstam, a Pulitzer winner, called on publisher Arthur Sulzberger Sr. to unhire Safire. Safire's friend, the humor writer Art Buchwald, called him the right man at the wrong time. But Safire began to win converts when it turned out his phone had been tapped by the Nixon White House. It was taken as a sign that he hadn't been anyone's yes man. And former Nixon speechwriter Ben Stein says conservatives found hope in Safire.
Here he was, just sitting smack dab in the middle of this very liberal newspaper and giving no quarter nor asking for any, and writing just what he thought about conservative issues and not backing down. And this was a great beacon to us in the years of darkness.
Safire didn't start out as a partisan. He had been a reporter for the New York Herald Tribune and American Forces Network. He also worked as a publicity agent. In 1959, Safire went to the Moscow World's Fair to promote an American home builder. He lured Vice President Nixon, whom he had never met, into a model home. A crush of reporters trapped Nixon and Soviet Premier Nikita Khrushchev in the kitchen. Nixon started to point out the merits of American capitalism. Khrushchev fired back angrily. At a party commemorating the 25th anniversary of the event, Safire recalled how he borrowed a camera from an Associated Press reporter who couldn't see the sparring politicians.
I was focusing on it, and there was some bureaucrat that kept trying to push his way into the picture. And I couldn't avoid taking it because I wanted to get the washing machine in the picture, because I was pushing washing machine. And so I shot the picture, including this bureaucrat, and 12 years later I realized who it was when I looked at the picture again, and that was Leonid Brezhnev. And he elbowed his way right to the top of the Soviet Union.
Nixon's performance made headlines. Safire's pictures were picked up around the world. And the two men clicked. Safire joined Nixon's unsuccessful 1960 presidential campaign. And when Nixon ran again in 1968, Safire signed up. Safire left the White House in 1973, before President Nixon's involvement in Watergate was clear. Times publisher Arthur Sulzberger hired Safire after being impressed by pieces he contributed to the Washington Post. He later added a weekly column on modern language to the Times. Safire, now 75, declined to be interviewed for the story. In print, Safire's tone is sharp-edged, if civilized. In person, he's gentler. He won a Pulitzer in 1978 for his columns questioning financial improprieties of Burt Lance, President Carter's confidant and budget director. Yet Lance later became a friend of Sapphire. He has sources at top levels of government, not only in Washington, but abroad. And those sources sometimes lead him to highly charged conclusions. Just 2 weeks after the September 2001 attacks, Sapphire wrote there had been links between Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein's regime. He was among the first to champion a report by Czech intelligence that an Al-Qaeda plotter met in Prague with an Iraqi official. Some Bush administration officials used that link to help justify the invasion of Iraq in 2003. But the Czechs backed off their claim. The 9/11 Commission declared that, quote, the available evidence does not support the original Czech report. And David Korn, Washington editor of the liberal magazine The Nation, says Sapphire rushed to false conclusions.
Turns out, no evidence to back this up. The FBI, the CIA have looked. Look, they haven't found it.
Korn, in fact, says Sapphire routinely fails to distinguish between hunches and reporting.
Several times in several columns, Sapphire stated as fact that there was a connection here. How does that fit in, then, with the Times' overall mission to inform the reader and to serve the truth?
Such criticisms are not limited to Korn, but Sapphire's friends and admirers are legion. The liberal writer David Halberstam, who called for Sapphire's dismissal back in 1973, now says he was wrong. And Sapphire's weekly columns on language, often drawing on political history, won fans of all ideologies. David Gergen, who's now also a columnist, says readers value Sapphire because he's a contrarian.
He follows his own instincts and his own dreams, and that leads him down some paths that sometimes are absolutely right, and he's way out in front of everybody else, and sometimes it leads him into dry holes, and you never know when he starts, but you always follow him because you want to know where the tail's going to go.
In 2003, the Times added conservative columnist David Brooks, and Gail Collins says the Times is likely to seek out another conservative to replace Sapphire. After lending his voice to Richard M. Nixon, Sapphire reclaimed it for himself and made it one of the most influential in political journalism. David Folkenflik, NPR News, Washington.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Renee Montagne.